Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 19, The Island of Jambudvip. Start with text 16. Just read the English. And some of the mountains are known as Malaya, Mangala Prashta, Mainaka, Trikuta, Rishaba, Kutaka, Kolaka, Saya, Devagiri, Rishamuka, Sri Shaila, Venkata, Mahendra, Varidara, Vindhya, Shuktiman, Rikshagiri, Pariyatra, Drona, Chitrakuta, Govardhan, Raivataka, Kakumba, Nila, Gomukha, Indrakila, and Kamagiri. Besides these, there are many other hills and many large and small rivers flowing from their slopes. Text 17 to 18. Two of the rivers, the Brahmaputra and the Shona, are called Nadas or main rivers. There are other great rivers that are very prominent. Chandravasa, Tamraparni, Avatoda, Kritamala, Vaihayasi, Kaviri, Veni, Payasvini, Sharkaravarta, Tungabhadra, Krishnavenya, Bhimarati, Godavari, Niravindya, Payoshni, Tapi, Reva, Sarasa, Narmada, Charmanviti, Mahanadi, Vedasmriti, Rishikulya, Trishama, Kaushiki, Mandakini, Jamuna, Saraswati, Drishavati, Gomati, Sarayu, Rodasthiti, Saptavati, Sushoma, Shadru, Chandrabhaga, Marudvrida, Vitasta, Asnikni, and Vishva. The inhabitants of Bharatvarsha are purified because they always remember these rivers. Sometimes they chant the names of these rivers as mantras, and sometimes they go directly to the rivers to touch them and bathe in them. Thus the inhabitants of Bharatvarsha should become purified. Purport, all these rivers are transcendental. Therefore one can be purified by remembering them, touching them, or bathing in them. This practice is still going on. Translation. People who take birth in this tract of land are divided according to the qualities of material nature, the modes of goodness, sattva-gun, passion, rajagun, and ignorance, tamagun. Some of them are born as exalted personalities, some are ordinary human beings, and some are extremely abominable. For in Bharatvarsha, one takes birth exactly according to one's past karma. One's position is ascertained by a bona fide spiritual master, and one is properly trained to engage in the service of Lord Vishnu according to the four social divisions, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, and the four spiritual divisions, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas, one's life becomes perfect. Purport. For further information, one should refer to Bhagavad Gita 14.18 and 18.42-45. Srila Ramanujacharya writes in his book, Vedanta Sangraha, quoting from the Vishnu Purana, the great sage Parsamuni has recommended, Vanashrama Charavata Purushena Parapuman Vishnur Radite Panta Nanyat Tatosha Karna. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, is worshipped by the proper execution of prescribed duties in the system of Vana and Ashram. There is no other way to satisfy the Lord. In the land of Bharatvarsha, the institution of Vanashram Dharma may be easily adopted. At the present moment, certain demoniac sections of the population of Bharatvarsha are disregarding the system of Vanashram Dharma. Because there is no institution to teach people how to become Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, or Brahmacharis, Grihasthas, Vanaprasthas, and Sannyasis, these demons want a classless society. This is resulting in chaotic conditions. In the name of secular government, Unqualified people are taking the supreme governmental posts. No one is being trained to act according to the principles of anashram dharma, and thus people are becoming increasingly degraded and are heading in the direction of animal life. The real aim of life is liberation, but unfortunately the opportunity for liberation is being denied to people in general, and therefore the human lives are being spoiled. The Krishna consciousness movement, however, is being propagated all over the world to reestablish the Vanashram Dharma system, thus save human society from gliding down to hellish life. Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasadagudai Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasatandeve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatya Des Dharna. Process at the end here, that the Krishna consciousness movement, however, is being propagated all over the world to reestablish the Vanashram Dharma system and thus save human society from gliding down to hellish life. This is certainly one of the purposes of the Krishna consciousness movement, but it's not the main purpose. The main purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement is to teach people to become Krishna conscious. But of course, before people can become Krishna conscious, first they have to come to the mode of goodness. Therefore, Chanaka Pandit, he says, Matrivat paradareshu paradwareshu lostrava atmavat sarabhuteshu yakpashiti sapanditaha. That the preliminary qualifications of learning is that one should see every woman except for his wife to be just like his mother. And one should see everyone else's property as to just be like garbage on the street. And one should see all other living entities to be just like one's own self. So such a vision, one is called a pandit. Janmana jayate shudra samskara bhavat dvija veda panta bhavat vipra Brahma Janatiti Brahmanaha. So by birth, people are born as Shudras. Shudra means those in the mode of ignorance. The mode of ignorance means that one identifies himself with this material body and he thinks that his primary duty is simply to provide for the basic necessities of life. One can't see beyond that. Well, as Krishna says in the 18th chapter, that those who are in the mode of ignorance, their knowledge is yet tu krishnava ekasnit karya sakta mahaitukam atattavat prajanati buddhisaparata avartanatarapam jata tamasamudarika. So they think that one kind of work is all in all without knowledge of the truth, and their knowledge is very meager. Such people are said to be in the mode of ignorance. So generally people think that the whole purpose of working is just to gain money. They can't see beyond that. They don't understand that work can actually give one liberation. But money more or less represents just sense gratification. Of the four purusharthas, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, generally people have not accepted that what dharma is. Either they don't know what dharma is, they're not educated in dharma, or they don't accept it. So here, vanashram dharma, a basic dharma, the first dharma that Ramananda Roy mentioned to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, people in this age, either they're unfamiliar with it, or if they hear about it, they think it's something other than what it actually is. They think it's a caste system, meant to keep people and a lower status so they can be exploited. Therefore, people generally are unfamiliar with any real dharma. Of course, they have their process of Malecha dharma or Yavana dharma, which allows all kinds of sinful activities in the name of dharma. People can kill animals, they can kill their own children, and at the same time they can think that they're being religious in the so-called dharmas in modern society. So factually, in general, modern society is simply concerned with making money. And they make money simply for sense gratification. So the real basis of a modern society is just sense gratification. May artha and kama are prominent with hardly any dharma, or there's no question of moksha. People don't know. They don't know that they're not their body, or that there's such a thing as liberation. Therefore, part of our attempt, or the attempt of the Krishna consciousness movement, is to bring people beyond this gross animalistic platform. And it's characterized, as we can see, as people have given up dharma, as they have no idea of moksha, as they become increasingly interested in simply making money for sense gratification. Therefore, acquiring material property and sex life have become prominent. Matri vad paradareshu, paradwareshu lostrava. People are simply greedy to get other people's property, and they want to enjoy as much sense gratification as possible. So this is degrading human society to a platform lower than the animal platform. And therefore, where is there any question of paśyati sapanditaha, atmavat sarabhuteshu? Where is there any question of seeing all of the entities to be on the same level? See all of the entities as spirit souls. Instead, animal killing is very prominent. Killing of all kinds of living entities is very prominent in modern society. People are simply in the mode of exploitation. Therefore, instead of becoming pandits, people are becoming upandits. But in order to bring people to a platform by which they can actually understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, therefore, there's an attempt, or there probably will be attempt in the future when it's possible, because nowadays, or there'll be an attempt to establish some kind of systematic social divisions and orders of life. Of course, now it's not really possible. We say Van Ashram, we're forming a society of Brahmins. Most people, they'll think that they're a Brahmin. No one will want to be a Kshatriya, no one will want to be a Vaishya, and no one will declare themselves a Shudra. Because, generally speaking, in modern society, if anyone has a lower position, they're just exploited. Lower position means that they work hard and they don't get anything in return. The lower your position is, the harder you work and the less you get. And the higher your position is, then the less you work and the more you get. Therefore, they think that Vanashram will be more or less like that. And unless the consciousness of those participating in the system is higher, it is like that. As we can see in India, there's a class of persons, they declare themselves to be Brahmins, although they don't follow. They don't work for the welfare of others, they simply declare themselves to have some official position, and they utilize it to exploit others. Therefore, the system is only practical when you actually have qualified persons to take their places within the system. It can't be artificially done by declaring someone a Brahmin artificially or declaring someone a Kshatriya artificially. It takes actually a thorough understanding of what the qualifications are of the activities. So it's kind of like which comes first, the chicken or the egg. If you don't have anyone qualified to train others, then how can they be trained up? And if you don't have anyone who knows what the qualifications are, and they themselves are not following, then how can they train anyone else up? So our society is primarily meant to educate its members so that some of them can come to the actual brahminical platform to actually become sense and mind controlled, to become learned in the shastras, to apply that shastras in a practical way, to come to the mode of goodness, by which one can understand everything in its proper perspective and know how to practically apply these things in one's daily life, and can see clearly how to engage others also. So Prabhupada's given us the method, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given us the method by chanting Hare Krishna. And of course Prabhupada's books are there also, that if we read these books and try to understand them and then apply them, then there is some possibility of becoming purified, especially since the emphasis is upon chanting the holy name of Krishna. Somehow or another, by chanting Krishna's name, we can come in contact with Krishna, and by becoming in contact with Krishna, we become purified of our misconceptions. So our emphasis is upon absorption in Krishna consciousness. But most people are not going to understand very clearly that their aim of life should be to become absorbed in Krishna consciousness. And even amongst our own society members, the members of our society, not everyone is going to be immediately absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada in his morning walks, or in his walks, described at Vanashram, he gave many reasons why we might institute Vanashram within ISKCON. One of them is that so that we can properly engage our members. It's not that everyone is necessarily a Brahmin by qualification, but everyone has some contribution to make, especially towards the distribution of Krishna consciousness. Everyone has some talents and ability, and if that is properly engaged, then people can make their contribution in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. So for our own organization, and also to set the example for people in general. Not everyone's going to be very enthusiastic about living a monastic style of life. Most people can't at all appreciate what we're doing. It's completely antithetical to their life. They think everything is here just for their enjoyment, and as long as there's some possibility of enjoying, why should you give it up? Therefore, at least to set the standard of what real enjoyment is in the material world, what real security is. Present society, for instance, is based upon all kinds of false ideas, which is very hard. People don't even know what it's based on, what to speak of the fact that it's false. For instance, generally speaking, no one knows, most people don't know how to grow any food. Does anyone know here how to grow food? Most people think that growing food means just put some seed in the ground and hope for the best. What's that? Yeah, there's a whole... In other words, there's no... People, if, say, there was some food shortage, they wouldn't have a clue what to do. They might see if they can find a pack of seeds somewhere and put them in the ground and just hope for the best. Maybe 6 months something would happen. So therefore most people are dependent on the supermarket or the country store or something like that. Most people are not growing food. But why would the farmer give you the food? Because you have to give him something in return, namely a piece of paper. So you give him a piece of paper and he gives you food, or you get food from somewhere. So everything is based upon faith in that piece of paper. In other words, our very existence depends upon that someone has some faith that this piece of paper is worth something. But actually, what is it worth? Can anyone say, what is the value of the piece of paper? Yes?
Valuable, the gold,
it's meant to be. Yeah, but I heard in Australia they sold all the gold. Believe. What's that?
Based on belief.
What do they believe? And what is that based on? Yeah. Something like that, I guess. They hope, yeah, you can take the piece of paper and exchange it for something else. So it's an indirect way of bartering. Of course, no one's really very clear what it's really worth. How do you know it's really worth? You have to go to, you look it up in the newspaper or something, you find out what it's worth. But why it's worth that, no one really knows. And what it's going to be worth so-called tomorrow, no one really knows either. Tomorrow could be worth nothing. If suddenly they declare that, I mean, that's, I guess at one time in the 1920s, when they had the stock market crash. So I was told that you could buy a Rolls Royce for $50. Because people lost faith in the money. Because I guess $50 is a good price for Rolls Royce. But I was told that the stock market went so far down at one point that the person, like the shares of these big companies were going for a dollar. And so the people working there sweeping up in the stock market, they bought the stock. They were around when it dropped all the way down to a dollar, so they bought it. But actually, it's worth as much as people think it's worth, as long as they have faith in it. But why should people have faith if, say, tomorrow you go to the store, probably gives the example that during the World War II, the government, the English government decided that in order to get people to join the army on the side of the British, what they do is they sunk the boats that were carrying all the rice. And so the boats sank, and then artificially, at the same time, they increased the price of rice. So that from one moment to the next, the price of rice in India went from, I guess, like a mound for 5 annas to 50 rupees a mound. It increased like 100 times or 10 times, whatever it was. And therefore, no one could purchase anything anymore. So at one moment you had some money, it was worth something, so much rice, and the next moment it wasn't worth anything. I saw in places like Peru, where when I first got there, the money was worth, it was 10 soles or something like that to a dollar. And then within 2 years, it was 2 million soles to a dollar. And then they changed it to intis. 1 inti to a dollar, 2 intis to a dollar, and then it went up to 1 million again. So you can imagine if you were on a pension, where you're getting, say, 100 or 200 soles every month pension, and then suddenly it was worth, you know, 1 millionth of a penny. If postage stamp, the used postage stamp that it was sent with is worth, was worth more than your check. So naturally people wouldn't have very much faith in such a money economy. So similarly, modern society is based upon faith that we can take $1 in Australian money and get so much food in return. But if the food, for instance, the demand increased, there were more people wanting the bag of rice, then of course the price of the rice would go up and one's dollar would go all the way down. If the demand increased, the number of people demanding, or the supply decreased, then the amount of money that was there would be less and less. So people are simply at the mercy of whatever they're saying the price is. And that could change at any time. Therefore, more or less, people are dependent upon something which is completely arbitrary for their very existence. So vanashram means that at least people should have some kind of stable economy, something which is real. Otherwise, if there is any fluctuation in the markets, just like there is now, I heard in the eastern countries like Malaysia and Indonesia and places like that, Maharaj, you put on com that you can buy 2 first-class tickets in Malaysia now for $3,000.
Round the world
tickets. You can buy 2 just regular economy ones for like a little over $1,000. Because of the exchange. So you can, in other words, it's already starting to happen that, at least in Asia, the economy has more or less fallen apart. And now in Australia, because they do trade with Asia, a lot of their trade goes to Asia, their produce, tourist industry, they're dependent upon Asia. Therefore, it's just a question of time before Australia becomes affected, if they're not already affected. Although everyone's sitting around like, everything's, she'll be right, Mike. But when the Australian dollar is worth, you know, instead of a dollar, it's worth a, you know, a penny. And people would, they probably would say, well, she's not all right, Mike. Therefore, Vanashram means that people who live on the, at least, they'll have some economic stability. Some real economic stability means that one has to have some source of food, and that source of food should be easily available. Not that it depends upon the fluctuations of the dollar. At one moment you're a multi-millionaire, and the next moment you don't have a dime, simply because the stock market changed. In 1929, when people woke up one day, and instead of being multi-billionaires, they didn't have a dime. They thought they were rich one moment, the next moment they didn't have anything. So that's not possible if you're actually based on an agrarian culture where the majority of the people are actually growing food. Most people are in the Vanashram system are growing food, and you have the basic stability, the basic necessities of life. Food and shelter, food and clothing. Then there's some question of thinking about something beyond the body. If people don't have anything to eat, then there's no question of their thinking of, quote, higher topics. They'll simply be looking around for something to eat. So Prabhupada wanted that our society have farm communities and that the devotees actually know how to farm. Most of the devotees, we tend to take the easiest way out. Unless there's a crisis, and after the crisis happens, and we're trying to figure out what to do. Because that's modern society. If you can, for instance, you can go to the store and probably buy in season certain types of vegetables or fruits at practically a very small price. But if you had to grow it, it'd take you hours and hours to grow it. Of course, the quality of the food, people don't question. As long as it's red and it's round and it resembles a tomato, then they think, well, it must be the real thing. What's inside of it, they don't question. You know, if you put a match to it, it explodes. And the government's buying them as, you know, alternative weapons, chemical weapons. That people don't question what the quality is, just as long as it looks like the real thing. That's what counts. Matter of fact, if it looks like the real thing, it's probably better than the real thing. Yeah.
I read a book on tomatoes and how they grow, and the plumbers on those small Ford cars, ice cores, they get tested in the brand pack at the same place tomatoes get tested, and the tomatoes actually
That's comforting to know.
They
have solid tomatoes. Yeah, sure. In any case, the point is that somehow or another, one way or another, Prabhupada says here that our Krishna consciousness movement is meant to introduce Vanashram. So we're sure that Krishna will arrange it eventually, that the devotees become inspired to do that. When it's going to be or how it's going to be, that I couldn't really say. But it's the fact that unless our earnings, what we're doing, our energy is being put into some kind of activity which is actually producing some kind of state stability. Stability meaning that we don't have to, now we go out, we criticize the materialists, for doing so many sinful activities, but at the same time, we're also dependent on them in so many different ways. So it's very hard with full enthusiasm, full conviction, to criticize someone that you're dependent on. So unless the devotees become independent in their livelihood, then it's very hard to preach effectively the Krishna consciousness movement. We're thinking that we're criticizing, one hand, modern society for its over-dependence upon, artificial dependence upon so many different things, but then we're dependent on that artificial society. So on the other hand, if we actually have real farm communities where the devotees are actually growing their food, and we're basing our livelihood upon following the Vanashram system, then when the Brahmins speak, when those who have Shastric knowledge speak, people will be able to listen. They won't have to be afraid that if I listen too carefully, then I'll have to give up my welfare check or something, and therefore I won't have any means of livelihood. So they'll know that if we're all dependent on Krishna. Unless Krishna supplies rain, we won't have food grain. And food grain, the rain, comes through the performance of sacrifice. And sacrifice means that we should perform our prescribed duties. Therefore, we should find out what our prescribed duties are, because unless we perform them, rain won't come in the proper way, and we won't be able to get our food. So in the Vanashram system, the Vaishyas were very happy to give one quarter of their production to the Kshatriyas, because they knew the Kshatriyas would perform sacrifice, and the sacrifice would produce the right amount of rain, and therefore they'd be benefited, because then they, with the right amount of rain, they'd grow. So they knew that there's an interdependence between the work of the Vaishyas and the work of the Kshatriyas. And the Kshatriyas were very enthusiastic to give charity to the Brahmins, because the Brahmins would give all the information, and they had to perform the sacrifices, and they were the ones who executed the sacrifices. So they knew that the welfare of the society, even materially speaking, was dependent upon the expert Brahmins. So they provide them with all necessities. And the Shudras were completely dependent upon the other orders of life, so they were glad to assist. So by this mutual cooperation between the Brahmins, the Vaishyas, the Shudras, and the Kshatriyas, all the material necessities would be supplied, and therefore people could very nicely hear about the higher other topics too, because they didn't have to worry about these things. That the closer the cooperation was, then the more easily these things would be supplied, the more scheduled the rain would be, and therefore everyone, the farmers, knew exactly when to plant and when not to plant. The weather was adjusted by the demigods in such a way is that creating food or producing food was simple as possible. And therefore, when the food problem was solved, when the basic clothing problem was solved, because most of these things come from cotton and other types of materials, or the wood, it also depends upon proper rain, the proper climate. So when these things were solved, then people would have the time to hear about Krishna. They'd have the inclination, they'd have the time. And nowadays, people don't think. They think they don't have to worry about what the weather is. They think it's just an accident. They'll hear about it on the weather report. And it has nothing to do with what they're doing. They're not responsible. It's just all by accident. Some clouds moving in and stuff like that. It has nothing to do with us. And whether we get food grains or not, we just have faith that the scientists will figure it all out. Even if there's a drought for 10 years, still everything will be. She'll be all right. She'll be right. But we'll see what happens. So I'll stop there. Are there any questions?
Yeah. Just an observation that Western countries like Australia, particularly about 70% of the people live in urban, or like they're not living on the land. So for them to be encouraged or convinced to give up their, you know, so-called sense gratification, comfortable life in the cities or whatever, to take up a self-sufficient life on the land, very few people are going to do it voluntarily. It's more being forced into the situation.
Yeah.
Like a global conflict or a natural catastrophe or whatever.
But generally what happens is it's always economic. Mm. People just, they want to fight with each other, you know, because they have nothing better to do. Mm. Generally what happens is that there's some economic crisis, some countries, they don't have something and some other country has it, or there's some economic crisis and therefore the leaders, in order to divert the minds of the people, they declare war on some other country so that people forget the cause of their problems. Just like World War II came about because of economic problems. And now, although they claim they have control over everything, but obviously they don't have very much control. People don't even know, you know, basically how things work anymore. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess there's since I've been here for 25 years, I guess in this body, and I've noticed, maybe it's just my awareness, but people seem to suffer more and more as they get older. Do you think that there's enough suffering that people will eventually look to us for the guidance?
Not if we're suffering. As long as we're not suffering, if we're Krishna conscious, they will. But Krishna consciousness is more than just putting on a dhoti or a sari and shaving one's head or doing something external. It actually will be shown by our willingness to spread Krishna consciousness fully according to the plan that Prabhupada has given us. Prabhupada has given us the real revolutionary plan to take over the planet. But we're kind of, most of us are kind of content that, you know, prasadam's on time and we do a little harinam once in a while and everything's all right. We don't really have that full conviction, you know, to become completely absorbed in saving the world. Yeah.
I've heard that I've mentioned, like, you know, sort of want to save the world too, like everyone agreeing with others, you know. And just wondered, I mentioned this to a few senior Vaishnavas, and they told me that it's already predicted that Krishna consciousness for the next, I'm not sure how many thousands of years, will rise and then it will drop off, and then there won't be one devotee left on the entire world towards the end of the age of Kali Yuga. Is that set in stone? Is it absolutely true?
It may be there, but I'm sure if we don't voluntarily try and spread Krishna consciousness, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will probably make the arrangements by which we'll become inspired to do it. In other words, it's a fact, the inspiration can't be artificial in one sense, but in the other sense that we just also have to accept the natural arrangements that are made. We may have to tolerate a few things. Right now, we're not. For instance, if you go out and distribute books and everyone's not very receptive, then it's very difficult to become inspired. So one may not be so much inspired to distribute books. On the other hand, if you go out and you meet many receptive people, then one becomes more inspired. So now it's a combination of our lack of full conviction and the fact that people are quite contented with their materialistic life. They actually think it's going to go on forever. So we have to see in the future what kind of arrangements are made by the Lord so that people are probably less inspired by their material life and we're more inspired to take up, to present the actual solution, Krishna consciousness. Just like we talk about Vanashram, but if we even you buy a farm, the householders usually move out to the farm and it becomes just like a suburban place in the suburbs. No one wants to grow anything. They think, why should I grow anything? Go to the store and buy it cheaper. It's better to sell paintings. You know, it's easier. Sell paintings and I'll have my house in the country and my, you know, maybe we'll plant a few tomatoes or something. And that will be my farming. Because farming is hard work and you can't just, you know, do it on the weekend. It means that the body has to become strong, you have to get adjusted to it, and you have to actually be enthusiastic to do it. So, nowadays it's very difficult because seemingly food is very easily available at a reduced price. Easier to do something else and just get the money to buy the food, and you don't have to worry about such hard work. So most of us will just take that alternative. But as far as the reality, you know, it's just like in the long term, the question is how much in the long term will the system actually last? Even we can see it's falling apart, but still, Pashana Pina Pashati, we can't really see it. No one really wants to see it. We're just hoping somehow or another it's just going to keep on going on. Even after the rhinoceros is shot, it still runs, you know, another 100 yards. So that we'll see, I guess. I think now I heard that mangoes are, instead of $1.50, they're 50 cents now.
I am
So the next year they won't grow mangoes because they can't make any money from it. So next year they'll be $2. Might as well get the mangoes while you can. And then if the Asian market, if the Australian market drops, and also I heard France and Germany invested heavily in Asia. So if their economies go down, and then the American economy, which is invested in France and Germany.
Yeah. History has shown that different personalities, say, perhaps their original position as Gopis or empowered personalities, they're coming down. Like since Lord Caitanya, who was prominent in the Pacific succession, they're all especially empowered personalities. They've achieved, you know, amazing sort of results with their preaching. Sort of the onus on us that we should try to become like very vast and powered ourselves to try to achieve you know, that sort of devotional service, or should we be thinking that these personalities will be continued, you know? I mean, sometimes I think the only way something is going to happen is that it's like from a higher authority is going
to happen. No, we have to become Krishna conscious. Yeah. What Krishna wants us to do is another thing, but somehow or another we have to give up our anarthas and take up the process of Krishna consciousness as it actually is. So we have to understand.